Welcome to Season 7 of Witchlit, a place to talk about the craft of writing and writing the craft. I'm your host, Victoria Rashke, author, publisher, witch, and nosy Scorpio. Witchlit is brought to you by Thousand Volt Press, a family-owned independent publisher established to produce the books we want to see in the world. Titles including Changing Paths by Yvonne Abreu, Conjuring the Commonplace by Lane Fuller and Corey Thomas Hutchison, A Death in the Dry River by Lisa Allen Agostini, and my most recent book, Verona Green, can be purchased directly from thousandvoltpress.com or wherever you buy books. You can also support the show by buying us a cup of coffee at ko-fi.com/witchlitpodcast. Priestess Stephanie Rose Bird is a painter and the author of several best-selling books on earth spirituality, hoodoo, and anthropology, including African American Magic, Sticks, Stones, Roots, and Bones, 365 Days of Hoodoo, and Light, Bright, and Damn Near White. She has two books out in 2024, The Healing Tree from Wiser and The Motherland Herbal with Harper One. Bird, who holds a BFA and an MFA, is a devotee of the divinely feminine. She is an elder, priestess, magic maker, and keeper of the spiritual wisdom of her indigenous African ancestors. Her work centers on the nexus of earth wisdom and the legacy of Black cultural heritage. Priestess Stephanie Rose Bird, welcome to Witchlit.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Oh, God. It is an honor to have you on, and I'm so excited to talk to you about all of your work, and especially these two new beautiful books. But our first question for everyone on the show, and I guess couched in many different ways, but, you know, I feel like there's so much media, there's so much going on, people are distracted. So why still write? Why still write books?
It just comes to me. The words come to me. They need to be written down. I love books. I am surrounded by books right now as we speak, behind me, the slides, on my desk. It's just my chosen form. Mm-hmm.
Because you paint as well. So you're a double threat.
Yeah. I do like my paintings. Yes. So now they're coming together more like they did in the beginning, in my first book and in my most recent book.
Yeah, I loved that about the Netherland Herbal, that your drawings, especially there, really added another layer, I guess, another dimension to the book, to know that that was your artwork. Because, I mean, oftentimes the author doesn't get to do the illustrations. So.
Oh. And they're really, they're deeply spiritual drawings, like where I go when I draw plants. So it's not like they are even illustration. You did the called them right, they are drawings, and some are even black and white paintings, but they're not really illustrations.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So I guess, you know, kind of to start, like, what was your journey as an author? I mean, I'm assuming, and this is possibly wrong, that your MFA is actually in fine art.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is in visual arts. And my first degree, the MFA, is in painting and drawing. Mm-hmm. I did minor in ceramics. So I always really enjoyed writing. And, you know, as a youth, I was very involved in poetry and poetry readings and competitions and things like that. I never really wrote short stories, but I was really into poetry. With the artwork, you always have to write proposals and artistic statements and things like that. So I found myself getting more and more into the writing aspect of the painting. And then in like 1999, the year 2000, I really took a full dive into it. I was writing a memoir. And then I also had the Bones of Sticks, Stones, Roots, and Bones at that time. So it seems organic. I've always migrated from one art form to another. So this just seemed like another movement in that migration.
Yeah. And that makes sense to me. Well, I think, you know, just thinking about like how much like all of the other creative fields, to some extent, there is this aspect of writing. I mean, even if it's, you know, if you talk about theater, someone has to write the play, right? I mean, they're, exactly. You know, and if you have dance performance, if someone wrote that music, there could be lyrics. I mean, there's always this aspect of writing around yes. it. So it's funny to me how many people I've interviewed on the show kind of are creative in multiple disciplines.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was very serious about being a dancer. And I did that, you know, I performed, traveled and performed and so forth. I was in two traveling choirs, different types, a classical one and a gospel. What else? I did theater. So I have done pretty much every art form. I've never played an instrument.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got time, right?
Yes. Well, I'm very interested in the crystal bowls. Oh. I know that they are in my immediate future for upcoming presentations.
Oh, so wow.
They must be included. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But even when I do those, I will be, I know I'm not a musician. So, but I just feel like to lift the vibration up to where I needed to be, mm-hmm. I need those bowls.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I feel like those are pretty forgiving instrument. Like, I don't know that you have to be truly a musician with musical theory and all that to play them the same way. It is more about the vibe, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I like that. So I have interviewed a couple other people on the show who've had two books released the same year. So I have to ask, what has that been like?
Motherland Herbal has not been released yet. Mm-hmm. It will be released in June. And A Healing Tree came out in March. So they do have a little bit of time between them. Mm-hmm. And I've been able to promote and speak on The Healing Tree separately than Motherland Herbal. But it's joyful. I feel flattered. I feel honored to have the opportunity. And at the same time, it is challenging.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's like picking one of your children to speak about the most. It's not something that you really want to do.
Yeah. So. And Stephanie and I talked a little bit before for listeners. So we're recording in April. So by the time this comes out, both books will be available for listeners. Oh, yes. But I read them back to back. And they're, I think what you said about in our email correspondence about, you know, the Motherland Herbal really being a culmination of your work.
Yes.
Like just in the two books I read recently, I have read some of your other stuff, but it's been a little while. I didn't reread it for this. It's very obvious that all of these things kind of culminated in the Motherland Herbal. So I guess I kind of wanted to talk to you about, like, it's clear to me reading the book, there's so much of you in it, like not just the artwork and not just kind of like your culture, but you've done so much work to this. There's a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of research and personal interest and all of that. So I guess, do you kind of want to talk about the arc of that part of the work, about actually the culmination of this book?
Sure. So the funny thing is that Motherland Herbal was written years ago, and then it was not its right time to come to the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So some of the information from the book was parsed off into smaller books. So it's really magical and interesting how that happened. It wasn't its time. It is its time now. There are these other books in existence, but it is the mother of those books. It holds them. It holds them in its belly. So, mm-hmm. You know, but as did I say, the year like 2006 is, I think, when it was around what I considered finished, mm-hmm. 2006, 2007. So, but so much happens in time. So much you learn things, you know, mm-hmm. George Floyd happened. All of these other people were murdered and taken down. And, you know, there's an aspect of the book, definitely, that is about social justice. Mm-hmm. So I think that it needed to wait until it could address and incorporate them and the happenings of the world in it. So, yeah, I don't really, your question is very complex, but I hope that I answered it well enough, because sometimes when I think I have it, I will wander on and on and on.
Oh, that's all good. One of the things that I think shows through in the book is that you've kind of lived all over the world and you've traveled a lot. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to ask you, like, how that's fed your work, either as a writer, as a magic maker, as an artist. Like, it's clear that you have this bigger view of the world. And I just wanted to ask you about that.
I love that question. You know, my view of the world started so small. You know, I was in a town of what is now 550 people, very small. And then the community that I lived in within that, you know, there were maybe six homes around the lake where I lived. So very small. I used to, quote unquote, run away in the woods, you know, with my peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I knew I had places to go, but definitely I could not get to them through the woods. So, yeah, I don't even think that in my books I've ever talked about going back and forth to Japan so much and traveling through Japan with my husband. At that time, he was my boyfriend. But, they have an enormous, the different travels, even just coastal, like going from living on the East Coast to the West Coast and now to the Midwest. I've gotten a taste of America's best and kind of worst qualities, things that I don't particularly like. But, you know, right now, when you said that, a couple of things jumped in my mind as we've been talking. One of them was the didgeridoo in Australia. And the other, because it's just such a, wow, it's pulling up the spirits from the earth. And then they're coming out of this like tube. So, that instrument I really appreciate and love. And then in Japan, the interaction with spirit, with altars, and incense, it was all just like so magical for me. And it was at a time that I wasn't really fully engaged in the magic making that I am right now. But I think I have built on those experiences. They've been really wonderful. And I need to go back.
Yeah. I think for me, it was interesting in reading your work that this kind of meshing of, which I think is so, in some ways, so uniquely North American, this meshing of like the hoodoo tradition and, you know, ATRs and ADRs. And then, you know, basically Wicca, like modern witchcraft revival, kind of blend in your work in this really kind of seamless way. Like it was really interesting to do that, because I haven't really read other texts on hoodoo that incorporate kind of modern witchcraft. But I think probably they do, because we're all kind of overlapped and layered on each other, but maybe not so openly.
I call it out. I'm open about it. And I think that, especially when I first came out with Sticks, Stones, Roots, and Bones, it really put a bee in some people's bonnets. They were like, what the hell? You know, what is this? What's going on? This isn't real. But I am always authentic to myself. And those are all pieces and parts of me that I feel happy that I've been able to get integration. And I think sometimes a part of that is me entering the stage of the elder. I've been told I'm a young elder. I've been told, step back a little bit. You're not a whole elder, but just entering that realm, like so much wisdom is over there in that domain. And yeah, I feel the integration of all of the things that I am. And I always talk about them. You know, I always talk about being a shaman, a green witch, a hoodoo. And people, it's so interesting. I don't really know why, but they always latch on to the hoodoo and then just stay there. They're like, oh, yes, that's what she is. And I'm like, really? You're going to tell me what I am?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I could guess why people might do that. It's not a good reason. I mean, it's not a good thing.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I interviewed Via Hedera very early on in the show about her book about like the multicultural nature of magic in the United States and kind of how part of it is that we are all a mishmash ancestrally at this point. Yes. And so that is reflected kind of in our practice. Uh-huh. And I mean, I grew up in Appalachia.
Yes.
So, you know, talk about mishmash.
Yeah. Are you from Virginia, I recall?
At East Tennessee.
Oh, Tennessee. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I've spent a great deal of time there and enjoyed myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I lived in Nashville for a long time. So I'm familiar with the conference that you go to regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before that, I was going to things in Knoxville.
Oh, okay.
And up to the Smokies.
Yeah, I grew up closer to Knoxville and lived in Knoxville for a long time. So
yeah,
it's an interesting place.
very magical. When I went there and looked, well, this was actually Knoxville because I actually camped out in the mountains. And but to me, the woods, I always look at the woods and I compare them back to my home. And oh my gosh, this looks like someone came out here and placed everything in such a beautiful way. Like it's all interesting and intriguing. I liked the forest there very much.
Yeah. I know it's funny being on the, now I'm on the West Coast. I've kind of had that same experience of, you know, being on the East Coast and, well, not the coast so much, but Eastern United States and then West Coast. And, it's so funny to me, like you think it's all the same continent. It can't be that different. And it is night and day.
Oh, it's so different.
So different. I still have not gotten used to the fact that I do not have cardinals in my yard.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I love them. And they seem to always carry messages with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it is, I don't know. It's interesting to me, that idea, like you kind of going back to you saying that people kind of pigeonhole you into one idea when I just think we're all bigger than that. It's just funny to me that people choose that.
Yeah. There are so many different philosophies about our being and who we can be, who people almost seem like they want to give you permission to be someone, but you know who you are.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, you
and I think, I do think there is something to that kind of coming to own it. Maybe we don't all have to wait till our elderhood, but I do think even that young elderhood gives you some perspective on these things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What has that been like for you to kind of come into that part of your life?
Where I am now, mm-hmm. you mean?
Yeah.
Wonderful. That's why I am Priestess Stephanie Rose Bird, and I was once not. Mm-hmm. It's like the book, Motherland Herbal. This is a part of my life when there's a lot of integration going on in a lot of me. I wonder if it's a collage or somehow all of the different parts of myself are coming together. And I feel the wisdom with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that.
When you mentioned that retreat, the Sacred Waters Retreat, I believe. Oh, my cat's coming. we are all called, there are several of us that are called Queen Mothers. And I love that. I just step into it. I step into it. And we are the elder council with the women. And a lot of the women are younger. So
I think, I don't know. I feel like culturally, because we are so youth focused and youth obsessed, like I feel like we don't. Like, I feel like sometimes, especially as women or femmes, that it's often difficult to accept that elder role.
It is.
Because we have this idea that that isn't valued the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's something that, you know, over the last year, I've let my hair go gray. I stopped dyeing it. And you'll see, I have a little bit of colors in there, pink and purple. And
oh, it's beautiful. Violet,
but primarily gray, and my afro is gray completely. And I love it. And people like the person who braided my hair, she has been having an enormous problem with it, although she's older than I am. Mm-hmm. She's like at least 10 years older than me. And she's like, oh, don't you want to henna your hair and put indigo in it? And, oh, I can get it for you, no problem. And I'm like, no, I don't want that. This is my choice. This is my way of being in the world. But it can be like going silver or allowing yourself to be that way is kind of a hard choice because our society doesn't make it very comfortable or easy.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's funny when you say silver rather than gray, I always think of it as like, it's your silver crown. You know, you earned
it. Exactly. I have fought with that since I was 21. It started to come in and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to cover it. I have to cover it every 6 to 8 weeks. And I got to a certain point and I was like, why? It's under that covering. And I'm excited to explore it.
Yeah, mine has really started to go in the last year. I've had a little gray for about 10 years. And then the last year, I blame COVID, even though you know, I think just being 51, like it's just time for the gray to come in. But
what? You're 51?
Yeah.
Get the heck out of here.
I just stay out of the sun with a hat. But yeah, no, I'm excited about the grays. Partly, and it's funny because you're talking about the pink and purple in your hair because I hate having my hair stripped to have like a bright color in it. But gray takes color great.
Mm-hmm. And these are just braided add-ins. I don't have any color, real color in my hair. I would not do that at this point. But yeah, being an elder or an elder in training or whatever the heck I am.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful with my family gatherings and, you know, to be the sort of matriarchy, you know, establishing that for the family and at gatherings. It's something really different for me and I enjoy it.
Yeah. So now that you've traveled to all these beautiful and wonderful places and you live in a pretty interesting place too, how do you integrate, I guess, part of that more integration, like all of these things into like the landscape you live in now? You talk about it a little bit in the book and I just kind of wanted to bring that out.
Yeah. So like my garden, I look out over it. I'm at my working desk right now and I look out over it. And the garden is very cottage garden. My husband calls it that. I've thrown seeds out and let them explode. That's how he looks upon it. So he has his organizational boxes there too for the vegetables. But I wanted to bring past and present together and the elements that I like in different places that I have lived together, in so that my path, I can always see that. I can see, and I have reminders around me. I have a huge batch of soapwort on one side to always remind me, because I do get distracted. Hey, you are a soap maker, and here we are. And it's pretty large. The bouncing bets is another name for it, but they are there. And I had to sit down. I was going to try to get the garden certified. And a part of that exercise is to write how many species, like write them out. And I wrote down 35 without blinking. Mm-hmm. And there are more out there. So there's a lot there. So yeah, just trying to bring together what I love of my past into the present and where I have lived. You know, it's funny because so I grew up on a lake, as a lot of people know, who know my work and everything. But Lake Michigan is like a lake.
Yes.
It's like the ocean. Yeah, yeah. It's very akin to an ocean. So, I see a lot of things coming together, a lot of similarities, past and present, to the environment and where I am.
Yeah. I mean, you've had both coasts and now the inland seas kind of.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You know, I have a secret. I don't want to piss people off. I know I have Californian readers, but I could barely make it in California. I could barely breathe with the desert. Like, I just, spiritually, it just wasn't my place.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a hard time there. The Midwest, I'm okay here. You know, where I am in particular is growing very violent. And that's something to be watchful of and consider, because we all live here. My whole, my family is here. And so there's a lot to keep an eye on and worry about.
Yeah.
Because it's no joke. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, we've talked about with my family, like, you know, where, like, I think about, like, with climate change and with, you know, like the political unrest that is, I think, already started with it and it's coming.
Yes.
Like, we're all on the same planet. Like, there's really nowhere to escape to, you know, and like, how do we live in the communities we're in and do that? And it's funny to me, you said that about California. I'm in more Northern California, but that was a real shock to me coming from East Tennessee, even here. Cause when I moved, it's been 3 years ago, we were in the middle of the very bad drought still.
Yes.
So like, it was here for 6 months before it rained.
Oh my goodness.
And I just couldn't even imagine at any point in my life living somewhere where it didn't rain for 6 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, we've had rain come back and the winters have been very wet. And this is the part of California I love, when everything's green in the spring after all the winter rain, but it goes away pretty fast.
So. And I love that you did that and like clarified, because California is not a single biome. There are many different ones there. And so where I was having my hissy fit about and reaction to was Southern, like very Southern. So.
Yeah.
And you were very northern, so two very different environments.
Yeah, and Southern California is definitely drier, I think. Mm-hmm. And also, like, feels, I don't know, it's, like, raw, more raw than Northern California. Because I think because there is some of that northwest rainforest, like, the further north you go in California, you get more of that or up further elevations.
Mm-hmm.
But LA and San Diego are desert and dry, you know, it's a whole different feel. Yeah.
And a lot of my work, because I was there for graduate school, and a lot of my work centers around landscape. Mm-hmm. And so to go from where I grew up on the East Coast to that, it was, I had an extreme reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very difficult to paint there. So. Yeah.
And I think just there's also that, like, the seasonality is so different. Like, I've joked that I don't know when spring actually starts here.
Yeah.
Because there's always something blooming. Like, stuff blooms year round.
Yeah.
So, like, when is spring? When does that happen? And and it's more like the rainy and dry season, like in the Caribbean or, you know.
And in Australia as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you escaped California. How did you end up in Chicago?
Oh, my husband wanted to go to his graduate school here at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago for sculpture. So we came here and set our roots down.
Yeah. I love in the book when you're talking about when you bought the house and the yard was just concrete and dirt.
Oh, yeah. So barren. Just so different than it is right now, even though we're still not officially feeling like spring here. Yeah, it was so barren and yet fertile. You could see that all of the potential there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It had just been left to kind of be dry and abandoned.
Some people just aren't into it, aren't into the gardening thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've lived in a lot of rentals where, you know, it's just grass and then there's a stick out front. And you're like,
what?
Yeah. Like, I like having, and one of the things I missed when we moved is the house we lived in Knoxville. The woman who, she and her husband had built the house in the 20s and 30s, and she'd had this huge extensive garden, which had mostly gone to rewild, but the bones of it were still there.
Yeah.
And there were redwoods and crepe myrtles and a giant magnolia tree that I could look out from my writing desk. And we moved into an apartment here where my view was of the parking lot.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And
it was really rough transition, but now we're renting a house kind of a little more suburban in San Jose. And when we came to look at the house, the front yard is planted with lavender.
Yes. Oh.
And I was like, this is the house. We're renting this place. Because mm-hmm. they have like lemon trees and apple trees and bee balm and all the stuff is already planted. Yeah. And I was like, somebody loves this house. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think that we also see what we want to see mm-hmm. in our environment around us, because, you know, I talk a lot about my garden, but on the other side of the street of it is it's like a pretty big building. It's like a mm-hmm. 6-foot flat. It's low, but it's wide and mm-hmm. Houses a lot of people. So
yeah.
I look at the birch tree in front of it. You know, I just like have, like, I, my focus just comes back to nature. So mm-hmm. I see yeah. it and I don't see it.
Yeah, we have a very large church across the street from us. And mm-hmm. they're like the green space in front of the church is planted with olive trees and royal palms, yeah. Which is still so weird to me to live somewhere where royal palms grow. Okay. Like, it's just so bizarre. And you look out and there's a palm tree and I'm like, okay, this is not the life I ever thought I would lead. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Environment and biomes just really incredible. Like when I went to Australia, we sort of, you know, you have to be affiliated with a university. So I was at mm-hmm. my university in Sydney. This was for the Fulbright Scholar mm-hmm. Award. And then we traveled across the country. We went to the bottom, the south, that reminded me of Florida. Mm-hmm. And then we went to the top end, that's so tropical. That we actually, my son and I got what's called going tropo. Do you know, mm-hmm. we went tropo. Are you familiar with that?
No.
So it's like an inexplicable illness that you get with high fevers. And you're just like terribly, terribly ill. Like we couldn't acclimate to it. He was a little guy. He was, how old was he? Maybe 4 mm-hmm. years old. And so it's a real worry when you have someone that young who is that sick, but we got over it. But it's just good. Like, yeah, I have these reactions because I am so nature oriented. It mm-hmm. really it can hit hard, like you drop off. Yeah, yeah.
So I can't. Oh no, I feel like I poured both of your books into my brain, and they're really books uh-huh. you kind of would dip into a lot because there's so much information about. I mean, they really are herbals.
Yes,
it's usually not something you read cover to cover. I can always tell like what I've read to a book because I always stop and read things out to my husband. And he's from Trinidad. So anybody who uh-huh. has the witch lit bingo card can get their Trinidad square today. But because you mentioned Trinidad and Tobago in both books, and it was mm-hmm. I was like, oh, let me read you this thing about
her. Oh, how nice. Yeah. Great.
And they Trinidad is one of those places, you know, kind of talking about that like overlap of cultures, like it's so layered and rich with, you know, the original native peoples and then I guess the waves of really enslaved people and indentured people who came and all of that culture that's there. It's just incredibly rich with stories and folklore and, you know, herbal traditions and different spiritual traditions and. Yeah, I feel like I just, you know, he and I have been together a little over 20 years, and I feel like I've just scratched the surface on learning about where he's from.
Interesting. Yeah, people take you places with their souls and spirits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was, that's always my mark of a good book is when I have to stop and read stuff out loud to my family.
Yeah, I'll say. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I love hearing that.
Yeah,
I do that as well.
So what is the horizon look like for you now, writing wise, art wise, life wise?
I'm developing a program, a school called Earthwise Spirituality. That's why I always have to pause when, because I have Motherland Herbal and then Earthwise Spirituality. Okay. Let me just say this slowly so that I get it through my own head, which thing I'm talking about. So it's a 6-month long apprenticeship, and it is based on my work. It's the two teaching texts are Sticks, Stones, Roots and Bones and Motherland Herbal. And then I feel like it's really important that the participants also read The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. Mm-hmm. So that is an enormous undertaking to make, like, it's a platform, it's an online platform, it's online, but it's still, you know, we had to select staff and the texts and, you know, develop a website. There's a lot to it, but mm-hmm. I'm really happy to be doing that. That is something else that I've sat on for the last 10 years. I already had the outline for this apprenticeship for all of that time. And it took me the time to find the right partner who, interestingly enough, she's the director of Sacred Waters Retreat. So mm-hmm. she's the program director. So that I want to make, after I did the illustrations for Motherland Herbal, it made me want to engage in my artwork more. And so I'm planning art-related projects and a workbook to one of my books.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited about all of that stuff.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to be excited about. That's really cool. Yeah. So interesting, like what, I don't know, like I always am curious, like what other people are like feeding their creative well with, like, mm-hmm. so to kind of prep for all those things, like how do you feed that well of sustaining your energy and your creativity in that many projects? Like what's important to you?
I think meditation is a really big one. And so I do guided meditations, and I also listen to sound of certain wavelengths mm-hmm. that are going to take me elsewhere. And just like so-called yoga music, you know, it's, you know, just things that you can find on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I also just listen to nature sounds of various sorts of storms and fires and things like that. So that feeds me. And feeds, it gets me inspired, and then I'll always come circling back to plants. So, however, I have saying to my husband actually lately, I need to be near more animals, like now, like, so, you know, without a passport or anything, like now, we have to find ways to be near more animals. So, I would say those types of things. One thing actually always feeds another too. Like you do a book like Motherland Herbal, and then reflect on it, and it's like, oh, it's drawings. You know, I need to explore that in my work and take it further. So, it's just like a line.
One of the things that I'm really enjoying, read a because the book is now out as we're talking, the Motherland Herbal book, and so I received a digital proof to read, and I can't wait to get like a physical copy of the book because I was so intrigued by the recipes in the third part. Again, folks can get another bingo today. I went to culinary school and I worked as a chef and a caterer for a while. And so I'm always interested in like people's food ways and like how that feeds their creativity and their magic and just like our sense of self and place and all of that too. And so I'm like, I really can't wait to make the succotash recipes.
Yes.
Corn season can't come soon enough.
Yeah, my feelings about it are ambivalent because that particular relative who taught us how to cook it was very stern and everything, but she had all of the country food ways, you know, from my people moved to New Jersey from Virginia, and she was in Virginia first. And then because my mother's the baby, so she was born in New Jersey. So difference. She taught my mother a lot, like how to make pies and things like that. But yeah, I feel like there's magic in food ways, like you said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've just been so interested lately. It feels like there's just been so much great public work. I mean, I think the work was going on. It just wasn't getting the attention of like Southern foodways and how so much of Southern foodways is dependent on the people who came from Africa and brought their produce and brought their foodways and all that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for a long time, it kind of got glossed and very whitewashed. And now I feel like with Michael Twitty and like all of these wonderful people, the High on the Hog book and Netflix, like just to see, here's the really beautiful story and the hardship of the story.
Yes.
And it is, you know, Southern food and Black food and white, you know, it's such this, and it's, to me, there's real magic in that. And really I could listen to Michael Twitty talk about food all day.
Me too. Absolutely. I was fascinated to learn about macaroni and cheese because we always like have it at our gatherings and at big holidays. Mm-hmm. But like, why? We didn't really question it. We're like, oh, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But to find out the answer was really interesting. For me, it just has to be made from scratch. I just never mess with that. Never mess with Jiffy cornbread. No, it has to be made. And in fact, when I went to Australia and was hanging out with the Aborigines, I was adopted into a family. And I taught, they make damper, this particular clan that I was with. Mm-hmm. Damper is more a flour and water. It's an unleavened bread that is cooked outside over the open fire. It's so good. I had that every morning. But I thought, oh, this is really like cornbread. So I taught them, you know, found the materials and taught them how to make cornbread as well. So I know anthropologists would slap me in the face for mixing up traditions and teaching my ways, but that's what I did. I really was very hands off and reflective apart from that there. I just saw a similarity, and I thought also it's got to be a little bit healthier than white flour and water. Mm-hmm. So
sugar. What I think about cornbread, oh gosh, I mean, we could probably do a whole podcast just about cornbread. Because you know, my mom made cornbread, and it was always, it had to be the Three Rivers in the bag, you know, the brown bag, Three Rivers cornbread. And she made it often with yellow, but we had white occasionally. But she made what my dad called Yankee cornbread because it had an egg in it.
Oh.
And a little bit of sugar. It wasn't just, I grew up on that. And then the first time I had like white cornbread with no sugar, I was like, what is this? But now I kind of prefer it.
I put very little sugar in mine. I have a recipe that's quite old. And I don't know, but through science, through vinegar and leaveners in it, it makes, you can make, it has cream, it's cream filled. Have you ever had that?
No.
It's completely cream filled in the center. So it's a little bit like a Boston cream.
Oh, wow.
Cake, but it's cornbread. My family just loves it.
Yeah.
I guess my hips love it too because it's stuck to them. It's delicious. It's a delicious recipe because my issue with cornbread is dryness. So that there's no dryness about that type.
Yeah.
But my husband is always asking me about putting jalapenos on there. And I'm like, nope.
I have had jalapeno cornbread with like actual, like, you know, corn niblets in it or whatever.
I like it when other people cook it, but
it's not your cornbread. Yeah.
No, it's not my way. So that's my only, I draw the line in different places. I like to mix and match, but sometimes I'm like, no, it's like attached cornbread. They have to be a certain way.
So. Yeah. So, gosh, I feel like, you know, I could probably talk about that for a long time too. I guess to kind of pull it back to writing, like, I was thinking about that, like, I don't know, like the food ways and stuff. So how do you think of yourself as a writer? Like, what is your like process for that? Like who is Priestess Stephanie as a writer?
Yeah. So a lot is governed by my dreams and by spirit. Mm-hmm. I just say spirit and the ancestors. They bring me messages and then I put it forward. So those three elements together, mm-hmm. dreams, spirit, and the ancestors will just bring me incredible information. And you can call it being empathic, or I mean, other people would look at it that way. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, you're just an empath, or some people would say, oh, it's just a coincidence. But I am presented with information and then I'm very eager to get it down on the page.
Yeah. Oh,
lovely. Even as I work, synchronicities happen. I will mm-hmm. say that where it's like I need a certain kind of information that I didn't even know exists and it will appear.
Yeah, I love that. I love that aspect of creativity, like when those disparate things, like you said, information you didn't even know you needed, like when it just connects to something you've already been thinking about. Or like, that was my favorite thing that happened in college when I finally was like, had the ability to kind of learn about whatever I wanted to learn about.
Yes.
And like these things would connect and it was just like fireworks going off in your brain. Like, I love that part of it.
But it's a part of being a witch and a shaman and a voodoo, you know. And Ami brought up the priestess Stephanie Roseberg. So where that comes from is that my bio, there are so many things in my bio. So I'm like, what are all of these things and what do they equal up to? Mm-hmm. Yes, a priestess. Got it. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I love that you've owned that and taken that upon yourself. I think that's a powerful move and a good illustration for other people too.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have to, but also you asked what I was going to be up to. And I talked about more tangible things that will be going out into the world. But mm-hmm. I am also embarking on a seminary program with the Temple of Kriya Yoga. And so it's yogic. It's not mm-hmm. religious at all. And I am, in fact, going to be bringing my studies and what else I need to study to my program. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. And we are, in the end, called priestesses and priests. And that's our role. So I kind of jumped the shark a little bit, maybe. But I felt the need to do it now. And then, but also, I will be a different type of priestess once I finish that program in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, lovely.
It's online and, you know, I'm not shaving my head or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I don't think that's a requirement. If it is, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just seems I've always been, since high school, like maybe sophomore in high school, I started to study yoga mm-hmm. and meditation. So it's a really big part of my life and my writing, as I mentioned. And you can see it, like threads of it, if you follow the books very closely. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, this is pranayama, and this is about your third eye now. So, yeah, there's that influence that's there that I'm going to water and cultivate more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think it's really easy when you are a busy person who is productive in that way, like you said, public facing things. Mm-hmm. You forget about, you know, to use them, I guess, what we would talk, like cultivate your own garden.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of gardens, just a little side note. So I told you I sit in front of my garden and there's a sidewalk. There's actually a crossroad right at my eye view. Mm-hmm. And I dreamed last week that a couple came down the path and then started to dig up my flowers and plant their own. And they were very ugly. I was completely incensed. I was like, how dare you? Like, what do you think you're doing? I figured it out. You know, it was just because of the sort of urban nature of where I live, a lot of like junk was blowing into the garden and covering mm-hmm. the flowers, my yeah. flowers. So, but anyway, again, I find dreams fascinating because mm-hmm. they yeah. often just reflect what's in the awake world. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mine lately seem to be very stressed out.
What's that?
My dreams lately have been very stressful. Oh, so mm-hmm. I've been trying to I've been listening. It's funny you said listening to nature sounds. My husband and I, for our anniversary, went to Carmel and stayed at a hotel very close to the ocean and slept with the sliding glass door open so we could hear the ocean. And I cannot hear the ocean where I am in San Jose. And so I've been sleeping with ocean sound on at night, and it has really helped just to kind of calm that whatever, hamster brain is going on when I'm trying to sleep. So
mm-hmm.
it's very soothing.
And, and water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very so much.
Yeah. Like I said, I feel like, I could talk about so many things for so long, and I want to, but I also I know people's attention spans. But I wanted to give you an opportunity. Like I said, this will come out in the beginning of July. Both the books will be out. But do you want to kind of tell people where to find you, find out maybe about your upcoming apprenticeship, all of that good stuff, and then we'll do our little game of chance.
Okay. So I have hamster brain right now. When you just said a lot of things, but so my website is www.stephanieroseberg.com. You can follow me on Instagram. I love Instagram because it's so visual. So that's at @S.R.Bird, and it's spelled B-I-R-D. So you can find me there. And between those two places, you'll find it's the key to every other venue and everything else going on, especially my website, because I blog on there and I do a lot of different things. And then my Earthwise Spirituality, probably at the release of this podcast, you will be able to sign up for it. So there's going to be information on both of the areas that I just mentioned, as well as my professional Facebook page. And they're all interconnected, but you will be able to sign up for the apprenticeship, the 6-month apprenticeship there. And what else? Hoping to bring out a divination kit, but that's big secret. Not anymore. So then what else did you ask?
I think you covered everything. And I'll put notes for that in the show notes so people can have links, because that's just easier sometimes to have a link.
Because my Facebook link is kind of long, so that way we can just write it out.
Yeah.
Prefer Facebook.
Yeah. So I'll make sure that's there so people can see that. So our last game, our last question is a little game. And I always tell people I am a double Scorpio, so I don't know how to do small talk.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like when I first meet people, I want to ask them their deep, dark secrets. So this is kind of my opportunity to do that. But it is kind of about your writing or your work or something that's come out and stuff that I've read. So I'm going to roll a die. A little purple die. And depending on what number I get, you'll get a question about death, sex, religion, politics, or money. Those, big things that we're not supposed to talk about in polite company.
Yes.
And if I roll a 6, you get to pick and you can pass if you like.
Okay.
So 1, death.
What about it?
So I was thinking about in reading your books, and especially these last two, there's so much about how, a spiritual life is kind of integrated with our natural kin, with plants and trees and animals. And so in that context for you, what does a good death look like?
Oh, God, I just got sad.
Oh, no.
Let's see. So, it's a part of, it's definitely just part of the cycle of life, which I always, have been reflecting on and writing on. And the older you get, the more you think about things like that, frankly. Yeah. A good death would be where I was surrounded by my family that I love so dearly. I could tell each one of them what I feel is so special about them. Mm-hmm. And then leaving and making sure that my work is still accessible to people who are remain interested in it. Mm-hmm. So for that, I have already taken steps to make sure that that will happen. Your book has a life with it after you. Yeah. Yeah, it continues to live. Yes. Yeah. So provisions have to be made so that it's well taken care of and it's mm-hmm. in the right hands to remain your work mm-hmm. the way you see it. So,
yeah, I think thinking about your legacy is,
yes,
you're right. Like the older you get, the more you think about like, what is that? And especially thinking about like, I don't know, I did my degrees in literature and creative writing and like how many sad tales of writers who died intestate or, you know, with no thought of what was going to happen to their stuff and the families that tear each other apart, trying to deal with that. And oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. that's kind of insane. So,
yeah, it is. It's hard. It was hard for me to do that because I'm so optimistic and about living. Mm-hmm. So it was hard for me to actually go in and like write provisions for everything and for my books, but I did it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I do think for me, like as, like I still feel like a baby. I mean, yes. even though, you know, but,
yes.
But I think there is like at least a quietness about in my brain about my mortality. Mm-hmm. If I just have, you know, think about like, it's harder to live when you're really afraid of dying, I guess, is kind of right. the succinct way mm-hmm. to do it. So when you kind of embrace that cycle, it seems like it's just easier to be alive and in the moment because you're it's not really taken true. Up with the fear of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, I am someone who is very on point about details. So I have been working very hard to actually make the death look like what I want it to look like mm-hmm. with just in terms of battling with the health systems and medical care and things like yeah. that. So it's interesting good, that you could ask that.
A good reminder to folks to have a will and a living will.
Yes. And an estate, if you're a writer, have an estate for your works. Authors Guild and different organizations like that can help you do that inexpensively.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So a little practical advice at the end yeah. here. mm-hmm. Stephanie, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom and putting good work into the world.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoy your show and I'm so glad to be a part of it now. So thank you.
I'm honored. Witch Lit is a production of Thousand Volt Press and is edited by Julian Rashke. Our intro music is Cosmic Glow by Andrew Kay, and our outro music is Voices by Alexander Shinekar. Transcripts and all our previous episodes are available at witchlitpod.com, and you can follow us on Instagram at witchlitpod. Please help other witches find us by leaving a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening to and reading Witchlit.